Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Scott Ritter, and Scott is going to talk about the Russian-Ukraine situation. So, Scott, give us your views on what's going on and what it means.
Well, first thing, we have to understand that nothing takes place in a vacuum. That the most current iteration of an ongoing disagreement between Russia and NATO, began actually this past spring when Russia made a decision to mobilize around 100,000 troops in the military districts adjacent to the Ukrainian border. Russia made no threats. People need to understand that. At no time has Russia come out and said, we are going to invade Ukraine. They just simply mobilized 100,000 troops and left it to the imagination of NATO, Ukraine, and the West, who immediately said, oh, my God, you're getting ready to invade. This is horrible, horrible. And then the Russians last spring drew down their forces. Russia learned a lot from that. They learned that NATO was scared. Ukraine was scared. The United States was scared. But the most important thing they learned is that there was no counter to the Russian move. NATO didn't have anything. The United States didn't have anything. Ukraine didn't have anything. And so Russia waited, and this fall they once again mobilized 100,000 troops. But they did this over a sustained mobilization. It's still ongoing today. There's more troops pouring into the region, creating a military capability, a significant military capability. But once again, at no time has Russia said, we're going to invade Ukraine. In fact, Russia has said the exact opposite. We have no intention of invading Ukraine. We're not going to do it. But the fact that Russia has put so many combat-capable forces in the vicinity of the Ukrainian border has sent a panic to the West, so much so that the United States has come out and said, well, we know Russia is going to invade Ukraine. Joe Biden has specifically said, I know it's going to happen. It's probably going to happen at this time period. He's projecting sometime in February. And now that we, the West, have committed to a Russian invasion of Ukraine that Russia says it's not going to do, we have to do something in response. And as Russia saw last spring, we got nothing. We talk about sanctions with massive consequences. We don't have any sanctions with massive consequences. Europe can't survive a sanctioning of Russia that targets, for instance, the energy sector, because the second that happens, all of the Russian energy that Europe needs to stay warm and have their economy function will stop flowing to Europe. Indeed, Russia just came out today and said the obvious. If you cut us off from the SWIFT banking system, that communications agreement that the United States controls about how banks transfer money and communicate with one another, Russia said, if you cut us off, instantly the energy will stop flowing to the West, because obviously we can't provide you energy that you're not able to pay us for. And the only method of payment right now for the Europeans to Russia is the SWIFT banking system. This is one of the problems the United States faces, is that trying to talk tough against Russia, it can't back its rhetoric up with reality, because the reality is there is no sanctions program that can do significant harm to Russia. And Russia has learned this. I mean, the Russians basically, by doing nothing other than mobilizing some troops along the border, have exposed every single weakness of the United States and NATO. Moreover, two things have emerged. There is no military option. Russia has exposed the fact that as far as, for a military alliance, NATO is an emperor with no clothes. There simply is nothing there short of nuclear weapons, but nobody's talking about that. NATO has no ability to counter the Russian military threat. They've got nothing. The United States is sitting here talking tough about sending 8,500 troops, not all of whom, by the way, are combat troops, and the combat troops that would be sent are paratroopers. Now, I don't know how your listeners are with, you know, military affairs, but, you know, paratroopers are to tanks like speed bumps are to cars, meaning that paratroopers can't stop tanks. Russia has a lot of tanks, and we don't have enough paratroopers. So, you know, what we're threatening to do militarily is a joke. Moreover, you know, we say we want to send more troops to Europe. The other thing that Russia has exposed is that NATO is not unified on this. I mean, we have a lot of NATO nations that are sending military support to Ukraine. We have a lot of NATO nations who aren't. Not only that, we have several NATO nations, Croatia, Bulgaria, that say we're not going to be a part of this at all. You will get no troops from our countries to take on Russia. That just isn't going to happen. Turkey has come out and said what's going on between NATO, the United States, and Russia is a war designed to destroy Turkey's relationship with Russia and to create a new front of confrontation that undermines Turkey in the Black Sea. So that's three nations right off the bat. That's one, you know, one-tenth of NATO that says we don't want to play. And NATO is a consensus-driven organization, meaning that you have to have everybody on board to make a decision. So they've exposed the economic weakness of the West, the military weakness of the West, and the political weakness of NATO. Meanwhile, Russia now has every option open to it. Could it invade? Yeah, but that would be counterproductive. An invasion actually plays to the strengths long-term of the U.S. and NATO because it would paint Russia as the bad guy. All Russia has to do is keep that fist there and then do the following. The United States and NATO have said that, you know, they rejected Russia's demands for security guarantees, namely that NATO will not expand into Ukraine. They say, no, we have an open door policy, meaning that any nation that qualifies for membership should be allowed to join. Furthermore, the United States and NATO said, we reject the notion of a sphere of influence for Russia, meaning that Russia can't say that its sphere of influence extends into, for instance, Ukraine or the Republic of Georgia. That's not permitted. Well, Russia has just come out and said, okay, we're going to be sending a naval squadron to the Caribbean as part of a military relationship with Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And now the United States has said, oh, no, you can't do that. If you do that, there will be a response. But Russia's exposing the hypocrisy of the United States. The other thing that Russia will do is, you know, the United States and NATO have come out and said we can consider arms control as a diplomatic off-ramp. No, what Russia is going to do is deploy new intermediate nuclear range weapons that threaten all of Europe. And then lastly, the thing that is going to really be the killer for us is Putin's going to China soon for the Winter Olympics. And when he goes, he's going to sign a number of agreements with China. The Chinese have already come out and said they fully support Russia vis-a-vis its stance on Ukraine. China is going to make Russia even more sanctions-proof. But more importantly, China is looking at the situation right now and saying there before the grace of God go us, meaning that once the United States, NATO, and the Western allies succeed in containing Russia and pushing Russia back, they're going to turn on China because China has a similar standoff with the West over Taiwan. So China's taking the position of it's better to fight the West over there in Europe than here off our shores. So China is going to do everything possible to ensure that the West feels pain if they sanction Russia. You know, they're basically putting the West on notice that this will not be a one-way street. And, you know, if you think that the West can't hurt Russia just solely by sanctioning Russia because of Russia's energy, imagine if China jumps on board and disrupts the entire Western supply chain. The Western economies will collapse. They will go into a free fall. This is the reality. The fact of the matter is this crisis has played into Russia's hands, China's hands, and the United States and NATO are going to be compelled down the road to back down. Now, Russia is sophisticated enough to give them a face-saving mechanism. It's not going to be total capitulation, total surrender. But mark my words, the United States and NATO will, within 6 months, have a formal position that says Ukraine will never be a member of NATO because they have no other choice.
First of all, why is Russia putting so many troops on the border?
Well, first of all, Russia's not putting so many troops on the border. Russia is mobilizing troops in two military districts, the Southern Military District and the Western Military District, and they're also deploying troops into Belarus. It's part of what they call normal military exercising. To say that Russia's putting troops on the Ukrainian border is like saying every time the United States holds a military exercise at Fort Hood, Texas, in Killeen, Texas, that we're putting troops on the U.S.-Mexican border. It's an absurdity. Yes, let's be honest. The Russian troops could, in short order, arrive at the Ukrainian border and cross over into Ukraine if they wanted to. But the notion that Russia can't exercise its military forces on the soil of Russia is an absurdity, But this again shows you just how panicked the West is that they, that they misinterpret or purposely so Russian military exercises and claim that it's a imminent threat to Ukrainian security. Notice that the Ukrainian government has taken the exact opposite stance, saying there is no threat of a Russian invasion. There's not enough troops there. They're not massing on our borders. We're not worried about it. Well, why isn't Ukraine worried about this if the United States and NATO are in a panic? Because this is about political spin, not about reality.
Wow. So how much money does the United States give NATO yearly?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, our budget is it amounts to many billions of dollars. But not giving to NATO, it's a commitment that we make to NATO. I mean, we have troops that are earmarked for NATO. We maintain a certain military presence in Europe, and we underwrite a large part of the NATO budget. Let's be absolutely certain. If it weren't for the United States, NATO could not exist. Europe does not have the political will to generate the income necessary to create a European version of NATO. NATO exists only because of American membership, but NATO also is useful to the United States. So we view this as, money well spent. Without NATO, we wouldn't be able to intimidate and leverage Europe into doing our bidding. But what we're finding is that we made NATO too big. We brought in too many people, and we can't control them all. And we see that right now in the Ukraine crisis, where, the Bulgarians and the Czechs have said we're not participating. The Turks aren't going to participate. The Germans aren't sending lethal military equipment. They sent 4,000 helmets as a symbolic gesture of support. But Germany is at the forefront of this problem. The Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline connecting Russia to Germany is something that the United States opposes greatly. But, Germany says it's essential for our economic security going forward. So Germany right now is in a quandary. The French have come out and said, hey, we're not supporting this rush towards war. There is no European unity. I mean, Ned Price, the spokesman for the State Department, Jen Psaki can get out there and say, Joe Biden can say, Tony Blinken can talk about unity, but that's just, vile propaganda on the part of the United States. There is no European unity when it comes to confronting Russia.
So if things don't go the way of NATO, how damaging is this to Joe Biden? Because he's already suffered so many setbacks, with Congress, but can he afford something like this?
Well, look, Joe Biden has committed political suicide by confronting Russia on this issue. He has put the credibility of his person and the presidency on the line in defining this as a crisis over, you know, the potential of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. What Joe Biden's going to find in the months to come is that the crisis is going to be in elsewhere. You know, the crisis is going to be in the Caribbean. And it's going to be interesting to see how Joe Biden, you know, sells this to the American people, because he just committed to, you know, the absolute, you know, inviolability of the open door policy of NATO, that anybody can join a military alliance and Russia has no sphere of influence. But what happens when Russia creates a military alliance in the Caribbean, right in our back door, and starts deploying naval forces in the Caribbean, naval forces which, by the way, could threaten, you know, the oil production of the Gulf of Mexico in a time of conflict. What is the United States going to do there? And if the United States acts strongly against this, as it is likely to do, you know, the hypocrisy is unsustainable. And, you know, there's a moment in history that many Americans should probably go back and read up on. It's the Cuban Missile Crisis. And most Americans look at the Cuban Missile Crisis as an example of Russia trying to put nuclear missiles into Cuba and John F. Kennedy bravely standing up to the Russians and forcing them to retreat. No, the Russians put missiles in Cuba because we had missiles in Turkey. The Jupiter missiles were in Turkey, threatening Russia. And the Russians had said all along, please get these missiles out of Turkey. They threaten us. And we ignored them. So Russia simply put missiles in Cuba. And there was a secret deal made that, you know, the Americans didn't want to talk about. And that was, we took the missiles out of Turkey. And I'm telling you right now, the Russians are going to create a new Cuban missile crisis in the Caribbean. And in exchange for Russia not putting its naval forces in the Caribbean, the United States will have to reverse course on Ukrainian membership in NATO and recognize a Russian sphere of influence in Ukraine. That's just the way it's going to be. Either that, or the United States will push this to a military conflict where it will be at fault, not Russia. And that changes the entire calculus of European support and global sympathy over the situation. If Russia invaded Ukraine now, the world would sort of look at it and say, bad move, dudes. But if Russia is responding to American aggression elsewhere, the whole world will support Russia. So the United States has backed itself into a corner here. Joe Biden has no cards to play. The outcome is inevitable. You know, the United States has made sure that it can't diplomatically get off of this this train heading to a cliff. It's boxed itself into a corner, and all the Russians are going to do is step back and enjoy watching the Americans head to the edge of the abyss. And then the Americans are going to be forced to jump off the train, turn to the Russians, and cut a deal with Russia that's favorable to Russia.
You know, when you put the TV on, you know, if you put on MSNBC, and, you know, I talk about this all the time with you, if you put on MSNBC or CNN, all they talk about is January 6th. And what you're talking about, they don't mention that on their programs. So the American people are more or less in the dark about what you're saying. Am I correct?
Well, they are and they aren't. I mean, the data's there. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to, you know, listen to the Russian denials. You know, the Russians have said, we're not going to invade Ukraine. I don't know how many times Russia has to say that, before people start to believe them. The point is, the Americans, thanks to the mainstream media and thanks to the prejudices of the U.S. government, are inclined to be dismissive of anything Russia says. Oh, that's a lie. Oh, that's propaganda. Oh, that's this. And accept at face value everything put forward by the U.S. government and by, you know, the establishment of think tanks that are populated with, you know, academics and diplomats like Michael McFaul, who hate, you know, Vladimir Putin with a passion and spin everything in a direction that's negative to Russia. But, you know, all of this game that's being played on TV is for domestic consumption only. It has no basis in reality. None whatsoever. Remember, Joe Biden is a guy that on July 23rd had a phone conversation with Ashraf Ghani, the president of Afghanistan, when the president of Afghanistan said, hey, you have to keep providing air support for our troops because I got 20,000 Taliban and Pakistani insurgents coming over the border, and if you lift air support like you're talking about, my government's going to collapse in a matter of days. And Biden said, whoa, 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 buddy, stop. You can't say that. I need you, and this is a direct quote from the president, I need you to go on TV and tell the world that everything is okay, even if it's not true. Even if it's not true. So the president is shaping perceptions based upon lies and misinformation. That's what he does. That's what Biden does. And right now it's happening vis-a-vis Russia. Nothing the White House says about what's going on in Ukraine is the truth. Nothing is the truth. It's all about shaping perception. And, you know, at some point in time, the Americans are going to wake up and realize they've been lied to. But by then, it's too late. By then, it's too late.
Now, what you're saying about Biden, does the 435 Congress people and the 100 senators feel the same? I'm sorry. I should separate the Democrats from the Republicans. The Democrats in Congress and in the Senate, are they aware of all of this stuff that you're saying?
Of course they are. Again, the purpose of Congress is not to support the collective defense of the American people. It used to be. It used to be that Congress would, on issues of national security, be of one mind and would try to be at least honest with themselves about what the threat was so that they could come up with an adequate solution. But today, Congress has broken down along party lines. Therefore, anything Biden says is automatically supported by the Democrats and automatically pushed it back against by the Republicans. I mean, you know, as I said, this entire Russia crisis is driven by domestic political concerns. That's it. It's not driven by reality.
Wow. So if this is not driven by reality, then there's other things that are going on in the federal government that is not driven by reality. Would you agree?
I would say that virtually every aspect of Joe Biden's administration's governing is driven by domestic political considerations divorced from reality.
So, you know, he was saying that he wants to run for a second term, and we're only just a little past 1 year in his first term, and he's an older gentleman. Is he just blowing off the steam? Do you think that he'll make it to a second term? And if so, what do you think the ramifications for the United States are?
Well, let's just start with the statement of the obvious. The Democrats are going to be crushed in 2022, absolutely crushed. And they're going to lose not only the House but the Senate, and they'll lose by decisive margins. So there won't be any wishy-washy, you know, 50-50 split, et cetera. The Republicans will have firm control of the Senate, and they will have firm control of the House, which means that nothing will get done. The Biden administration is finished, kaput. You know, even if Joe Biden was 35 years old and vibrant and young, he couldn't get reelected there. You know, but now we're talking about a man whose mental capacity is diminishing daily. I mean, I don't mean to be mean or cruel, but you just have to just watch his performance. It was pathetic. Yesterday he held a meeting on some economic venture, and he just mumbled and stumbled, and it was embarrassing, humiliating as an American to watch your president do this. And it's humiliating as a human that we would allow an elderly person to be abused in this fashion, because it's elder abuse. The man you know, is not. I'd love to see, you know, the drugs that are pumped into his body to get him ready for a press conference or a meeting, because, you know, left on his own volition, you know, this is a failing individual. This is a failing human being. Is Joe Biden going to be physically capable of running for president in 2024? I doubt it. I mean, I can't predict the future. You know, maybe he'll find a fountain of youth. But it doesn't matter. Whatever his health is, the fact is this is a horribly failed politician who is unable to be elected. Unless, I mean, again, this is to show you how ridiculous this country is has become, unless the Republicans nominate Donald Trump. And now we have literally the two worst qualified individuals in the United States to be president who will be running for president. And at that point, mm-hmm. I just give up, because it doesn't matter who wins. America loses. You know, but under normal circumstances, no, there's no way Joe Biden is a viable candidate for president in 2024.
Wow. So, Scott, you know, we talk quite a bit over the, you know, on my radio show. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to. What have you been writing lately?
Well, I mean, I do a lot of geopolitical analysis. I'm currently working on a piece on you know, the Russian-Ukrainian situation. I'm also finishing up a couple books about arms control and about the Gulf War. These are just personal projects of mine. They don't have any mm-hmm. relevance to what's going on in the world today. But I do spend mm-hmm. a lot of time, you know, trying to write, you know, pieces that challenge the mainstream media's viewpoint, and hopefully people who read it will at least be exposed to you know, a line of thinking that's different. Maybe you know, promote their own you know, their own thinking. That's the most important thing. I mean, I'm not here to tell anybody how to think or what to think. I just want people to think, and I'd like to, you know, expose them to alternative viewpoints, and maybe they can sit back and contemplate the issue and form their own opinion. That's the most effective citizen, by the way. The informed mm-hmm. citizen who is capable of coming up with their own points of view independent of, you know, outside pressures.
Scott, thank you for being on All Exits Closed today. I look forward to conversations in the future. You've been listening to Scott Ritter. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks, everybody.